Hello, 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 and welcome back to Talking of Books. My name's Annabelle Corton, with me in the studio, Will Jones, and our special guest, our book champion for today, Pratiti Talathi, who is a good friend of mine and office administrator at the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature. So not only does she have to put up with me during the week, she also has to put up with me today. How are you, Pratiti?
I'm good, Annabelle. How are you? And it's a nice costume you're having. I think it's a Comic-Con effect you have.
Oh yes, Comic-Con. We've managed to go 2 hours without talking about Comic-Con. I'm very proud of us, Will.
I'm not. It's been 2 hours without comics. It's horrible.
Oh.
So we need to get, actually, and it does kind of tie in with the topic that we have of literature. Comic-Con's on this weekend, if you don't know, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, and you should be in the car driving there right now. It's at the DIFC, and it's dealing with comic books and graphic novels, which are great. I had to give them a plug, by the way. If you come down, you'll probably be able to see me or Miss Annabelle dressed up in her steampunk revelry. It's fantastic. We're going to do the quiz questions.
Yes, let's just recap the quiz questions. So far, we've had Renee Denfeld's The Enchanted and Jamel Khalili's Pathfinder book. Now, the question for Renee Denfeld's book was really simple. A lot of you have texted in the correct answer, but what controversial punishment is referred to in the book The Enchanted by Renee Denfeld? And if you know the answer, please text it through to 4001. And Will, can you remind me of the other one?
Yes, and for the second quiz question, it was Jamel Khalili's The Pathfinders, The Golden Age of Arabic Science. Jamel Khalili is a professor at University of Surrey. What is he a professor of? You can definitely send it in at 4001, or you can use the Dubai Eye app. It's newer, it's faster, and it's free.
Oh, free. We love that word, free. Now, we were just talking about Comic-Con, and that is a beautiful springboard for our topic today, because Pratiti has chosen books about adventure and sports. Now, we're going to start with, I believe, The Long Way Round by Charlie Borman and Ewan McGregor. What made you want to pick that up?
Basically, my love for motorcycles.
Your love for motorcycles. I learn new things about you every day, Pratiti. Please, tell me more.
Basically, I was riding a motorcycle when I was in India, and I picked up riding a motorcycle. It was as a challenge put me up by one of my friends that girls cannot ride that. And I was like, I can prove you wrong then and there itself. And I planted, and I really wish I can go one of these bike rides with him. Even the best trek, the first I would love is to do Leh in India, which is from Leh, Manali to Leh, which is the dangerous path, they say. So, yes, that's what I picked up this book. And when it's basically he was here for the Literature Festival this year, 2015.
He was, yeah. Charlie Borman was at the Literature Festival.
Ewan McGregor was here?
No, Ewan McGregor wasn't. Believe me, if Ewan McGregor would have been here, you wouldn't have seen me, because I'd have been following him everywhere.
Me too.
Beautiful
that's
man.
Why she said he was here. I was like, what?
No,
wait,
no, no.
Where was... What?
Charlie Borman was here.
Okay.
And... When I have seen this book, it's basically a very nicely illustrated book and a color photographs which they clicked all the way around through their journey. This book talks about mainly their journey in continent of Africa. They go from country to country. And the main purpose to go on this drive was to see the projects done by UNICEF in that country. It's a journey of almost 15,000 miles. And... The journey, as I have rightly said, that initially my love for motorcycle, that was their mode of transport during the entire journey. They started their journey through Britain, then going through France, Italy, and then they enter in Africa through entering in Tunisia, and the journey begins. The book basically talks about, it's not like a written book, it's not like a paragraph-wise, but it's basically Ian and Charlie, they both are describing about what they feel of that particular situation. Mm-hmm. So it's like kind of a discussion going on in each of their mind.
Mm-hmm.
Like a particular situation, maybe Ian will see it differently and Charlie will see it differently, and they both are going explaining on that. And that's what really... I really like the different style of writing, which is what I was not expecting this book to be.
I've actually heard from a couple of people who've read this book and also seen the TV series that it's interesting to see how Ewan reacts to the same situation that Charlie reacts to. And did you find that one of them was more apt to complain about things than the other, or were they both pretty, oh, never mind, let's just get on and do it? I mean, did they really struggle with the journeys and the hardship? Or?
Yes, they do struggle. They do struggle because Africa is the hardest continent to go around on a motorcycle. Mm-hmm. So they do struggle. They have their ups and downs throughout the journey. But Charlie is always looking at it from the humorous angle. And when you read this book, yes, it's funny. However, he also has his, but he has a little bit of a critical angle to it that, I'm suffering and kind of a thing, but he almost
enjoys. Is this Ewan or Charlie?
Ewan. He enjoys the journey as much as Charlie did. And the very first sentence which made me to laugh is on the first day of the journey when they both meet each other, everything is set up, people are there to cheer them up. And Ewan says to Charlie that, okay, let me go and tell my wife that I'm going on this trip. Charlie is shocked and he says, what, you didn't tell your wife? He says, no, I just told her that I'm going to get some milk. So let me go and tell her that now I'm going on a 15,000 miles journey in Africa.
How long did it take? I mean, I read that it took about 4 months for them to travel about 20,000 miles. Imagine coming back to your wife after 4 months and she says, where were you? You said, well, I had to travel a long way to get that milk. I just don't think that she'd buy it, frankly.
It had better be really good.
It had to be really good milk.
They started their journey in the month of May, and they ended their journey in the month of in the first week of August. So yeah, it's almost 4 months, and the journey was the total kilometers which they traveled was 23,358 in that entire month.
And that trip that you just mentioned to me that you wanted to do a trip in your own home country. Mm-hmm. How many miles would that be?
Oh, it's not as big as this. It's definitely not as big as
Otherwise,
this.
Otherwise, you'd have to do your own TV series.
Oh, yes. But no, I'm not that good. No? Because that requires a lot of physical fitness as well when you ride such a heavy motorcycle. Because though you know, when you are riding, you're fine. But if you drop down off a motorcycle, you really need to have a strength to pick it up and again ride through and begin your journey. But in this book, as it's beautifully illustrated, the one thing I really liked is in the appendix, they have given, at the end of the book, they have given the entire description about their journey, about their route, from which country they went where and how many kilometers and number of days it required.
And also the equipment, I believe, is in the back.
So you could actually recreate their trip or parts of it. Say you wanted to go on a 2-week vacation and hey, that part of the trip took 10 days. Let's fly to this place and do the same thing.
Yes, anyone who's interested doing that definitely can do that. And for that, I first have to go and get my UAE motorcycle license, and I have to convince my husband for that though a little bit.
Tell him you're going to get the milk.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
No, maybe a few extra items as well. Maybe something like reindeer milk. So then you'd have to travel a really long way.
Yes, that's true.
Do appreciate it.
As Annabelle, you mentioned that they have given a list of equipment with the minute detail about what they required throughout the journey, how many number they required, and they were using a BMW motorcycle. So the parts which they used, then they had a car along with them, which was like a support vehicle, which was by Nissan. So what parts they used for that car, and as well as the entire list of a video and photography equipment. And I was going through that list. The list is almost 3 pages long. Mm. And it's not a small book like the regular book size. It's quite a big size of a book.
This is a side note, but also related to the festival. Now, we mentioned that Charlie Borman came to the festival. Unfortunately, Ewan McGregor didn't.
Invite him.
Oh, gosh,
Ewan, if you're
wish.
Listening, we would love for you to come.
Oh, please come to the festival.
Yes, I'm in the line.
Pachiti, behind me. So Charlie Borman came to the festival, but also Ted Simon came to the festival. Now, if you don't know Ted Simon, he also did a massive motorcycle journey circumnavigating the globe. And he did it later on in life, and it took him about 4 years, I think. And he did it. This is what fascinates me. He did it without camera crews. It was a solo journey. So Do you think that the camera crews and all that, I mean, did it get in the way? Did they achieve this on their own and the camera crews followed? And I mean, they had a lot of backup, didn't they?
Yes, like as you said, first let me mention about the Ted Simon, the journey which he did, the second one, which he again did it, Dreaming of Jupiter. I'm currently reading that book and that's really fascinating.
How old was he when he did it the second time?
I think...
So was it 70 or something?
70 or something. Yeah, and he did the first one at the age around 40 or 45, I believe. Because the first one he did in 1973. I may be wrong about his age, but I definitely remember the year when he did his first journey. Yes, now coming back to your question, Annabelle, about having this camera crew and a support vehicle alongside. Yes, I suppose that they needed to have this because they were their sponsor for this journey was UNICEF. Mm. And their main intention was to go and see how the projects UNICEF is running in Africa. So they needed to have a kind of a backup to go along in the continent. So they needed to have a support vehicle with the spare parts because you cannot carry everything on your motorbike. There is a restriction how much of a weight you can carry on a motorbike. And when it comes to a videographer and a photography crew, yes, you need it because then they can tell you. In this book, at some point, Charlie mentions that the work which is done by UNICEF in Africa is commendable. The way they have done it, there is a region where there are still land miles alive. There is a region where still there is no medical aid. Mm. And how these guys, UNICEF, is doing that without the help from United Nations, that is from UN. So probably to bring that to light, they need to have a photographic crew along with them.
Also, through the eyes of Charlie and Ewan and their description of travelling the world on the back of these motorcycles, you've also got a look at all the charity work that UNICEF is doing and all the hard work that they're doing around the world. That's great.
While reading this book, I literally relived the entire journey they did. This is how beautiful the book is. As they were going from countries to countries, I was travelling as a reader with them from countries to countries. And in one point, he mentions that here in when they go in Kenya, that here in Kenya, 16 community health workers were trained to ride the most inhospitable roads in the world. Without them, literally thousands of people would die. So we can imagine the conditions of the road and the importance of UNICEF in the life of people in Africa.
Absolutely. I mean, just reading a brief synopsis of The Long Way Round, I mean, that mentions things like treacherous roads and all that, and we will return. We're just going to pick up with Prachiti in a little while. So stay tuned to Talking of Books, and we'll be back with you.
From Jane Austen to George Orwell, this is Talking of Books in association with Emirates Airline Festival of Literature, only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Hello, and welcome back to Talking of Books. I'm sorry I say everything in threes, but I'm just too enthusiastic. It's partly Comic-Con, and mainly because we're talking about adventure books in the studio today, and I'm all about adventure. But before we go on to that, if you've been listening, we've been talking about Charlie Borman and Ewan McGregor's Long Way Round. Now, in the spirit of quizzes, we have a quiz question for you in addition to the ones that we've already shared. Now, the quiz question for this book, which you should be able to answer if you've been listening, is what is the method of transport that Charlie Borman and Ewan McGregor use on their journey in The Long Way Round? What method of transport do they use? If you know the answer, please send it through to 4001. Now, Will, you know exactly the answer to this, and I'm just wondering whether you've ever used that method of transport yourself. Are you an enthusiast?
I am, in fact. I love that method of transport.
Do
that
you?
Method of transport is a wonderful way to see the countryside.
I mean, we're obviously talking about hovercrafts.
We are. Jetpacks. Jetpacks. Comic-Con jetpacks.
There we go.
We should also remind our listeners of the other two quiz questions from the second hour, Jim Achele's Pathfinders. Jim Achele is a professor at the University of Surrey. What is he a professor of? And in the first hour, we were talking about the amazing The Enchanted by Renee Denfeld. And what controversial subject is it, does it deal with? Please put your answers with your name. We have several people that have sent stuff without their names. And you can send them via 4001, as Annabelle said, or you can send them through the Dubai Eye app. It's newer, it's faster, and again, it's free.
Free, all that magical word. And yes, we do need your names, because though it is Comic-Con and we are gifted with some superpowers, we won't be able to guess your name. I'm sorry, our powers only extend so far. But moving on to the book, Prachiti, I was looking at a few reviews, and I mentioned this just before we went away for a little while. And throughout their journeys, they encountered things like, obviously, exhaustion, injury, accidents, treacherous roads, unpredictable weather, turbulent politics, all that kind of thing. They were even chased by paparazzi in Kazakhstan. Do you have any memorable moments from The Long Way Round that you'd like to share with us?
Yes, I do have one of my moments where I literally have to stop for a moment and think about it and think where we are going and what we really want in future. Because when he is going through his journey, and he's in Ethiopia, and he comes across people who are injured because of the landmines, and who needs a treatment. Mm-hmm. And when he's going around, he come to know that there are still active landmines around, and people have to be careful. There are people who lost their limbs or their relatives. It's a very tragic sight to imagine. And he mentions that $3 to lay a landmine, and remember, $1,000 to deactivate it.
So $3
to lay a landmine and then to disarm it, you need $1,000 of investment per landmine, which is...
So no wonder they get left and they don't get deactivated, and then all these things happen. Well, that's horrible.
That's really a sad part, where I literally had... I'm kind of a person who'll never have tears in my eyes, and you'll hardly see me having tears in my eyes, but that literally brought tears in my eyes, because he explains about a guy in the village who lost his limb, and he was ashamed to use a wheelchair because he thought that, you know, that's kind of portrays him that he's disabled. And when he meets another girl, she says, no, I want to study. And if this is the only method I can use in my life to go ahead in a school which is little far away and I can study, I will use this wheelchair.
So which country was this? Was Ethiopia still?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
And there is another sentence which he has mentioned at the first opening line by Charlie, when he started describing about Ethiopia, was, if I can read that those two lines out, it struck me more forcefully than ever how so much the world is nothing like what we are used to see to the West. Most people live way below poverty line. The things we take for granted just don't figure in their lives.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, look at the problems which we have. Oh, which cuisine I should eat today? And see, these people are struggling even to survive. Yeah. Forget about having an exposure or to learning.
Mm. I mean, you said you had tears in your eyes, and because some of the things in there are particularly moving, I have read some of it myself, and especially the things that UNICEF has to deal with and the things that UNICEF has to work to improve, they're very, very moving, and it's really sad. But did you ever have tears in your eyes for more positive reasons? I mean, just reading the synopsis, how it all started. Can you tell us how it all started? Was there a phone call involved? You and McGregor was just sat there one day.
Yes. When they actually finished their first journey around the world, the trip around the world, and they were still... in that journey mode, and travel bug was there with them, and it comes to Charlie's mind that let's do another journey, and he gives a call to Ian saying that we are going to Africa, and he just couldn't believe it.
He just said, okay, we're going to Africa.
Yes.
Did you and Maria react at all?
Yes, I was like, you know, you really have to be crazy to just in a split of a mind you say that, oh, okay, I've just come back from around the world on a motorcycle, and now I'm planning another trip just in nick of a time, and that too a continent which is most hard to drive, which will come up as a surprise every nook and corner of your drive.
Because I'm not, if you're not aware, Will, the first book that they did together, and there was also a TV series, Long Way Round, they also did Long Way Up, or Long Way Down.
Long Way Down.
Long Way Down. Long Way Round, Long Way Down. I always get them mixed up. They have expressed an interest also in doing the Long Way Up. But it all depends, because Ewan McGregor is a beautiful human being and often in demand from movie studios. Free time isn't something that he has a lot of. So I think that they're figuring that out. But I hope that they do another one. But reading that, did you ever, from the travel book perspective, were there any places that you read about and the way they described them that you thought, oh God, I've got to go there? Like, did you ever think that you want to go somewhere like Mongolia or just really random places that you'd never consider traveling to?
Yes, basically, when I was going through the book, there are many places which I would definitely consider to go there. Which by looking at a photograph itself, you really get engrossed and you want to go there. And yes, I would definitely like to go to the entire continent, because, you know, the continent is so full of nature. It makes you grounded. It brings you back to the reality, away from the concrete world and the kind of a technology which makes our life easy, which is not even in there, which is not even easily accessible to those people. And that's where I would like to go. But there is one place where I'll go back to Ethiopia, because it's full of wildlife and the nature and the jungles around there. And just look at the photographs and you'll fall in love with those countries.
Yeah, you've got a beautiful edition of the book with photographs as well. I mean, it is available in paperback and it does have some photos in it, but yours is a lovely sort of full color.
This is basically an illustrated edition, and that's the reason it's a full color. And I think I wouldn't have enjoyed this book as much as I did while reading this illustrated edition if I would have read the simple paperback. No, it doesn't make any sense, because this book the photographs do justice to their journey. There is one or two photographs about a sandstorm when they encounter in their journey, and they don't know how to handle it, because in Africa you don't know which weather you're going to face. And the experience of their sandstorm and the photos, if I look at it, yes, it reminds me of a sandstorm which recently had in Dubai like a week before. But I can imagine how terrible it will be, because you are riding and we all were indoors. We were fortunate. But when you are riding and you don't know that how to keep your eyes open.
I suppose you must close them and just sort of hope for the best. I don't think that's the recommended practice when riding a motorcycle. Okay. I clearly don't know. But before we move on to our next book, Prachiti, we know that The Long Way Round is basically just a frank and highly entertaining travel book about two friends who ride the world together and do what they've always dreamed of doing. Do you have anywhere that you wish that they'd have gone to, somewhere that you would go with your friends and have your own travel adventure that you wish that they'd covered in that book? Your own country, for example.
Yeah, actually, I haven't read a book or I haven't watched the series where around the world. So I don't know which part of India have they been to, but definitely I would love, if they wish to ride, then they should go to the path which I was talking about, from Manali to Leh, Ladakh, because Ladakh is the highest point where it's very cold. And that journey, every motorcycle enthusiast in India, whomsoever I met, is highly recommending that journey, that, you know, it's really once in a life, you should do it. So I would recommend that they should plan something there, and I'm just keeping my fingers crossed that I get to go on that journey.
Me too.
You know, Charlie, if you're listening, I'm there.
Oh, Charlie, and Ewan, if you're listening, please take us with you. Will.
Yes, ma'am.
I've just been mammed.
It's old-fashioned. It was beat into me at a young age. If it had short hair, it was sir. If it had long hair, it was ma'am. If you couldn't tell, you say yes, Sam, and you let them choose.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. That's made my day.
It was habit, I apologize. Yes, miss.
Yes, miss. Where would you do it? Would you do a motorbike trip across the world? And where would you go?
I would love to do a motorbike trip in numerous places, actually. I would love to go up the Pacific coast in the Pacific Northwest of the United States from San Diego up to Oregon. I've done it in a car. It's beautiful on a motorbike. It'd probably be fantastic. Mm-hmm. I've also taken trips down through Mexico into Central America by car. I've never done it on a motorcycle. I'd love to do those. Those look fantastic. And other places? Okay, sure, let's go. And with that, you might want to stay tuned to hear what other places maybe Annabelle would like to take a motorcycle bike to in just a few minutes.
From Leo Tolstoy to Mark Twain, this is Talking of Books in association with Emirates Airline Festival of Literature, only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Talking of Books. It's Will Jones with Annabelle Cotton and Pragiti, our book champion today. Let's start off with reminding you of what the quiz questions are. So Annabelle, if you'll do the first one.
Right. So I'd like to remind you the quiz question of the book that we were just talking about, which was Ewan McGregor and Charlie Borman's Long Way Round. Now, please text in to 4001 if you know, and you should if you've been listening, what method of transport they use on their journey. Now, Will, what about the other quiz question for Jim Al-Khalili's book?
Last hour, we talked about Jim Al-Khalili's Pathfinder, The Golden Age of Arabic Science. The quiz question for that is, Jim Al-Khalili is a professor at the University of Surrey. What is his field of study? Send that in with 4001, or you can use our free app. And in the first hour, we were talking about Renee Denfield's The Enchanted, an amazing book. And the question there is, what controversial subject matter does that book deal with? Again, please send in your text to 4001, include your name and the answer, and we will be choosing a winner shortly as Mustafa will pull out the magic winner from the hats for each of them. And you can win a copy of each one of those books.
Please include your name in the text messages. And also, if you have anything to add to our discussion, if you just want to send in a message to us, that would be lovely as well, because we do get awfully lonely sat here. But we're not too lonely now, because we've got Pragiti. Now, Pragiti, what is the second book that you would like to talk to us about today?
Second book is the book which is my very favorite book. Again, he is a Litfest author, Richard Parkes. And his book is Beyond the Horizon. It's really motivating book. It's a journey of him doing, he basically is an extreme adventurist, adventure sports, and he's into mountaineering and everything. And
Did he start as an extreme adventurist? What was his...
No, he was basically a rugby player. Okay. And due to the injury, he had to quit playing rugby, and he kind of went into a trauma and depression and thinking that the world ends there, because he has never dreamed about anything else than playing a rugby. Mm. And he went into a depression. He goes back to his parents. His parents were his utmost support throughout his journey in his life, whatever he did. But you can imagine a rugby player having a bright career, going through injuries and quitting his career and staying with his parents, don't know what to do, what lies in future. And the line which motivates him was a line by his grandmother, which says that the line which is the horizon is the limit of your sight. That line he has tattooed on his arm, and that's the line of is a turning point of his life. And that's why he named the book as Beyond the Horizon.
So the line that he heard at his grandmother's funeral was, the horizon is the limit of your sight.
Yes. And when I read this book, and it's a book which I cannot keep it down again. His journey is so amazing, that a power of your mind, what it can lead to if you use it in a positive way. Amazing. I'm totally motivated by this book, and as I'm discussing this book and going through his journey, I still have goosebumps, and that's definitely not because of the cold in the studio, but because of the journey which he did throughout. And he actually there is another line of his which I'm impressed was, what's the point of being scared of something that you're not going to do because you're scared of doing it? How amazing is that? Then there is no point in being afraid of something, because you're not going to do it anyways.
Exactly. I mean, how appropriate. What if you're listening? I know we've had so many people who climb summits, who go on extreme adventures. I mean, there have been adventurers before, but the thing that makes Richard Park special is his 737 challenge. And would you like to tell us a bit about that, Prachiti? Explain what the 737 challenge is.
Basically, when he started, when the line motivated him about the horizon, which I have earlier mentioned, he came up to a website and he decided to take mountaineering as his hobby. He decides to try that out. He starts building up his strength slowly and gradually, and then he meets a mountaineer called Simon, and he suggests to him that, you know, let's do 7 summits, 3 poles, in 7 months.
As you do.
Yeah, just like that. And in the world, no one has done it before. And
so that's 7 of the highest summits in the world.
World.
And all 3 poles. So that's North Pole, South Pole, and that's
Everest is considered as the 3rd pole, which I was not very well sure of. When I read the book, it confirmed that, yes, Everest is considered as the 3rd pole of the Earth. And he does that
in less than 7 months.
Less than 7 months. Apparently, he does that in less than 7 months. So you can imagine how much strength, how much physical fitness he requires to go through this. It's not an easy task to climb and go through extreme weathers. And, you know, again, the 7 summits has got their own particular window of weather which is best to climb. So if you got delayed in climbing one of your summit, then you are delayed for the second one, and then probably you lose an opportunity to climb the second one because the bad weather window starts.
Exactly.
And then you'll not be able to do it in 7 months.
Because this is particularly special, the sheer number of expeditions that he went on. I mean, the 737 challenge is something that is insane, all that in less than 7 months. Because we've had about apparently 4,000 people have scaled the Everest since Hillary and Sherpa Tenzing. But he's not just done Everest, he's done
seven.
He's done 7 of them.
I mean, after that, I think probably he'll again have to think, what next? Mm. Because you have already done everything in just 7 months.
I think there'll always be something that Richard can do.
He's obviously doing so many things after that even. But when he's going through his summits, he come across in Everest specifically, he meet one person who's at the age of past 60s or past 70s. Mm. And who was doing the Everest summit. And he meet that person at a base camp. And when climbing up on his journey, he come to know that the person has passed away on his way because of some bad weather. And it was really shocking for him that how uncertain life is. Like, he's climbing up and the person who was doing it, you just met him a couple of days before and the person is no more.
Well, that's encouraging, isn't it? Halfway up the mountain and the guy you were just chatting to the other day has died because of what you're just doing. I was wondering if at any point in that book, what I don't understand is he was a rugby player that had to retire because he was injured. How did the injury not affect having to scale these mountains and take part in these challenges? Because I would have thought that he'd have the same issues with these as he would perhaps with being an athlete.
No, because as a rugby player, he already had that strength with him, a physical strength which is required as a rugby player, and that was enormous. And along that side, he trained himself with a couple of mountaineering people, and he has gone through the training, and he professionally trained himself. It's not like you and me getting up tomorrow and saying, okay, let's do it. No, there is enormous work which goes in.
Yeah.
The training which he has gone was preparing him for all the extreme weathers. As you can read his book, you can find out he was prepared for the minus 40 degrees as well as if the weather is extremely hot, how he'll tackle that.
My goodness.
I've got a quick question because I haven't read it. And it also could just be that my personality type, the first thing I come to is, how did he pay for it? Is it discussed in the book how he funded the expedition?
Initially, when he started his 737 challenge, he raised money by himself, his couple of friends, and his parents were his support. But when as he started progressing it, people joined him and they supported him. But yet, I understand your point of view, because this kind of a task requires a huge amount of sponsorship and huge amount of funds. He entirely spent all his savings on this challenge when he started that.
I was just going back and forth between your first book with Ewan McGregor and Charlie Berman. They spent a lot of money to go and do this, but what comes out of it for the first book for me is the more of the first world problems, when they talked about how poor everybody else is there and how they have to walk the distances they have to go to the school, and you got 12 people riding motorcycles to bring them nurses and doctors. And on the other hand, you have a famous athlete who's got the money to go do 7 summits. And it just, the dichotomy there hits me.
Indeed, because the first one was not because, the first journey was because they liked to travel and they had sponsors like UNICEF to sponsor their trip. But the second journey was an athlete who went into a depression, comes out of it, spends his entire saving on the journey, and then people join him. The second one is more motivating for me, because in the first one, they had everything along with them. Like, they had a support vehicle, they had photography, TV crew, everything at their hand stretch. But here, when he started that, he had nothing except the willpower.
And that's fascinating, and I think that's really inspiring. And I've met Richard, and he's really inspiring guy and so humble. I mean, you talk to him about all these amazing things he's done, he's like, oh, stop it, you know. And it's like, no, seriously, you've climbed Everest, you've climbed all these amazing mountains, and yet you stand here and you're just so humble. It's just wonderful to see. But I think what's important for people taking these expeditions and taking time to do all these amazing things is that we discover how much the human condition can withstand. And what's interesting is not necessarily everything that went into actually physically climbing the mountain, but what you were saying about the preparation that goes into it, and what sort of things these people have to do before they say, okay, you're ready to climb Everest now. Now, I'm going to read you a little bit, because I was just flicking through your book, Rachiti. There's a paragraph that I'd like to read, if we have time to do that now. So this is from Beyond the Horizon by Richard Parks. He says, I ended up lasting around about 50 minutes in the tank each time before my body's temperature dropped below 35 degrees Celsius, hypothermia. This is when the test begins for the scientists. They pull you out, wrap you in a shiny survival blanket, and lie you on a piece of foam in a cold room for an hour. That part was even worse, because you become colder before you become warmer. You are shivering uncontrollably, unable to speak or even react, and they leave you on your back for an hour. There's no threshold to be activated this time, no point at which you can be hauled out. You just have to endure. It's a long hour. And on the third day, they adjusted the oxygen levels in the chamber, so we did it all at the equivalent of 3,000 metres in altitude. So imagine going through all that and then they're saying, right, you have to do it all over again with different pressure.
I mean, his body temperature is set below minus 35, and he survived through all that. I'm currently sitting in the studio and I'm freezing because of just the temperature of the AC, so I can imagine what he could have gone through. I mean, it's difficult. You cannot do it unless you have enormous amount of a willpower and a physical strength to achieve these things. Lots and lots of efforts you need to put in. You cannot just do it like, you can decide that, oh, okay, down the line, 2 days, I'm going for this. No, even if for a single trek, because I have also done a bit of a trekking when I was a kid. So I can understand what kind of a strength he'll require. Yeah. That is journey is simply, simply amazing.
I do wonder about the funding, like you said, Will. I mean, these tests that the scientists do, I mean, how... I wonder how much money it costs to do all those sorts of things.
Actually, the test which you just mentioned, apparently that was the blanket company which wanted to try out, and they needed someone, a person willingly coming forward to try these tests out. And so I'm still in the motorcycle journey.
Got pictures of them motorbiking up Everest now.
Yeah, actually. But now I am confused. Should I go buy a bike, or should I just climb like Richard Parks did?
Why not do both? See, that is my motto for life. If you can't decide between two things, just do both.
Okay, so Annabelle, probably you'll have to inform office that from tomorrow I'm on my strength training and I'm not coming to the office.
Nice try, Prashuti. Nice try.
You went to get milk.
You went to get milk.
Yes.
Reindeer milk.
Reindeer milk.
You had to travel really far for that. Okay, so I think we'll stay tuned because we'll be back with more adventure stories with Prachiti. If you need to have a think about the answers to our quiz questions, maybe do that now with a cup of tea.
This is Talking of Books with Isabel Abahul, John McDonald, and the rest of the team in association with Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Talking of Books. My, these 3 hours have blown by. We wanted to welcome you back, and you know, you still got a few minutes to get in on the quiz questions, so let's remind you of what they are.
Okay, so just to remind you, the quiz question for the Charlie Borman and Ewan McGregor book is, what method of transport do Ewan McGregor and Charlie Borman use on their journey in The Long Way Round? Chance to win a Lit Fest book.
It's a jetpack.
No, don't promise things like that. I'm the one who'll get the jetpack first.
No, I meant that's the way they move around.
Okay.
From our second hour, we have Jim Al-Khaili's Pathfinders. He is a professor at University of Surrey. What is he a professor of? And you have a chance to win his book. And from our first hour, we have The Enchanted by Renee Denfeld. And the quiz question for that is, what controversial subject does the book deal with? Please send with your name and your answer to 4001, or you can send it via the Dubai Eye app. It's updated. It's newer. And again, it's got that wonderful word, free.
Free. That was a little bit creepy, wasn't
it? Yeah,
that
one was creepy. You have about 5 minutes before the winners are chosen. So if you've got them, send them.
Last chance. Do it now. Prachiti, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about Beyond the Horizon. And I believe there's another book as well that you want to talk to us about.
Yes, as you can see, I'm a quite big fan of basically memoirs and biographies and this adventure and sports books. So, but before we go to the third book, which I know you want to know more about it, but I would like to say that after this 737 challenge, which he did in less than 7 months.
It's Richard Parkes.
Richard Parkes went ahead and did a solo expedition on South Pole.
In addition to the 737 challenge?
Yes. After that, he wanted some more challenge, which as if 737 was not enough. So
personally, I'd have just sat on the couch and maybe watched Netflix.
Yes, I agree. But he went ahead and he did the South Pole journey where he was going there without any support. Like earlier for 737, he at least had a couple of people doing the same summit with him, but he did this one. This journey was from Hercules Inlet to the South Pole, and that is, the journey is of almost 1,140 kilometers, less plus minus 20 kilometers here and there.
And how long did it take him?
Again, he did it in the world record setting time, 39 days.
Does he want to do any more world records while he's at it? I mean, he seems to be collecting them like stamps.
Yeah, he seems like, you know, on my just way, I did a record. Oh, it was a record. I didn't even know that. And as you rightly said, he was very humble and very down to earth, very soft-spoken when we met him at the festival.
And day I won a world record again.
Oh, yeah. Gosh, I just keep winning them. Well, what can you do about it?
And he always, whenever I talk to him during the festival, he always said that gratitude is his mantra. That's what he believes in. And even in this book, Beyond the Horizon, he mentions about that part of South Pole journey as well, like doing it in less than 39 days. And where he know that he has to reach to the South Pole center where there is a pickup arranged for him to go back. But he chooses to come back again. Crazy.
So what's this other book that we might have a chance for you to just tell us
another,
a little bit about?
It's another sports book, and it's basically, let's go for some women power for that.
Oh, yes. Girl power.
Yes. Because this is a book by a female boxer from India. Her name is MC Mary Kom. Mm-hmm. And by now, most of those who follow boxing know her name. Because it's not just a name, but she came from a background of a farmer's family. where if she had to go to a school, her journey was 1 hour of a trek every day. And to reach to a school, she has to finish her household chores to help her father and her mother in the entire whatever is required, because her father is a farmer, cannot afford to have a help from outside. So obviously these kids have to help him. Mm-hmm. And this is how, like, by the time when she started going to school and she her colleagues, her friends used to say her that, you know, no one can beat you. Because she started, you can imagine every day, 1 hour you take to go to school. Just, and the road is not like just you're walking by a nice synthetic track. No, mm-hmm. definitely not. It's from the mountain.
Hard terrain.
Yep.
So and not an easy walk.
It's not an easy walk. And earlier she had, I mean, she joins the sport because her school was giving some facilities and some extra kind of grains to the family whose kids are in sports. So just for those extra food and the grain to help support her family, she starts going in sports. And her father initially was happy to let her go there just because of the extra food and the other benefits which you get from school. And as she starts her journey, initially she was not aware that whether she wants to be a boxing was not definitely her first choice. She starts her school and then she goes from initially as an athlete, she starts it. Then she realized that if she has to professionally move ahead to be an athlete, and the journey is difficult. So her father buys her a cycle by somehow saving his money and to support her so that she can save on the journey. But again, that is still, it was a tedious job and it was an exhausting journey because she was not supported by the balanced food diet. Then she goes and tries other sports and then she founds her boxing as a career. She gets on her first or second match, she meets her life partner, and he has been amazing support throughout for her boxing career.
Did she meet him in the ring?
No, he was the one who helped her when there was some problem about the funds when she went for one of the competitions, and he's the one who he basically was a law graduate, and he leaves his entire career to take care of her family, I mean her kids, mm-hmm. their kids and the entire family, and he let her pursue her wish, which is a boxing. This is an amazing book. I'll highly recommend this.
Remind us of the title of
this. The title, when we discussed it, I just didn't mention it. The title is Unbreakable.
And is she?
She is, because after her first pregnancy, she decides to leave this and take care of the kids. And her husband is the one who pushed her into the sports back again. He says, you go there. And as she coming from a village where there was a male majority and a female earning was like looked down upon, and he still chooses that, and he as a lawyer had a brilliant career, he gets good opportunities to progress in his career, but he decides to take up a small teaching job so that he can look after kids. And in one of the matches, he didn't inform her that her son is sick and he's been admitted to the hospital just because she will not lose her focus on the match.
Oh wow.
Simultaneously, she mentions about the problems which athletes in India face about having the training facilities and food and everything. And now she runs her own academy for those who cannot afford to go and learn this professionally.
Sounds like a fascinating book. So that's Unbreakable by
MC Marie Kondo. This is her autobiography.
Her autobiography.
Sounds like it needs to come back on a program about autobiographies and have its own half hour or hour, because that's a fascinating subject. But if we look at the time, my goodness, Tempus Fugit, it's flowing away.
Oh, gosh.
We've passed through our 3 hours and they've blown by.
Are you sure you didn't get the DeLorean out?
I should break out the TARDIS. It's around the corner. But since we're going to Comic-Con, we might be able to find it there.
All right.
We would like to announce the winners for our quiz contest.
Da, da, da.
All right, so for the first hour, who won a copy of The Enchanted by Renee Denfeld, the question was, what controversial punishment is referred to in the book? What is it, ladies?
It's capital punishment.
Capital punishment.
Or we will also accept the death penalty.
The winner was Muhammad Ahmed, with your phone number ending in 2057. The second question was about Jim Achilles' Pathfinder. What branch of science was Professor Al-Khali in? And it was theoretical physics. The winner was Sajid S., last four digits, 0970. And in the latest one, what is the method of transport Charlie Borman's talking about in the book?
It is. Oh, and if you didn't get it from Pratiti's noise over there, then it is the motorbike and not the jetpack, as Will would have you believe.
It's jetpack.
Who won that one?
Peter Milner won with the numbers in ending in 2831. They will be contacted shortly, and you guys can be able to come in and pick up a copy of the text. We want to thank you for your time and listening. We want to provide a very big thank you for our lead reviewer, Ms. Tiki. We want to say thank you to our young reviewer with Tahir, and that was a fascinating discussion. And Ms. Prajit, thank you very much for bringing in the books that you brought
in. It's my pleasure.
I would like to hear a lot more about Unbeaten, Unbreakable.
Sure, definitely.
That sounds like a fantastic thing. We want to tell all of you to go to the Middle East Film and Comic Convention that's right down the road at the DIFC.
Because now that the Literature Festival's finished for this year, what else are you going to do?
And you know you want to come see us and say hello and tell us that we were wrong about the books and we need other things. So we want to say a very big thank you also for Mustafa, who's behind the counter pressing the magic buttons and making me sound better than I am. It's a good thing I have a voice for radio. And from that... Is that it, guys?
Yeah, so thank you very much for listening. We'll catch you next week.